I'm Ed Gordon, and this is News and Notes. Today, we introduce a new feature to the show. From time to time, NPR's Farai Chidea will speak with our correspondent, Charlene Hunter-Galt, who is based in Johannesburg, South Africa. Charlene will update us on events and issues from the continent. So needless to say, we're excited about this new edition. Farai?
Thanks, Ed. Today, we're going to explore a criminal case in South Africa that could have a serious impact on the current government. We'll also look at the U.S. tug-of-war with Zimbabwe over the expulsion of thousands of squatters in that country. Charlene joins me now. Charlene, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Farai.
So let's talk about Jacob Zuma and South Africa. The ANC's popular deputy president is fighting a rape allegation. Zuma's supporters say the charges are political. Women's organization says it points to a culture of violence against women and a culture of impunity. Why is this so significant?
This case is important, Farai, because I think it's probably the biggest challenge to this government since the end of apartheid in 1994. Back in May, the president had to fire the deputy president. So now the deputy president is no longer the deputy president of the country. He's still deputy president of the ruling party. The newspaper that leaked the story has not revealed its sources, and the deputy president and the woman in question have both said that the allegations are false. But it has created more tension within the country, within the ruling party, and even those who've been supporting the former deputy president are starting to waver. And this at a time when South Africa is establishing itself in the international community as being for good governance, being a sound political system after 11 years now. So it is not a good time to have this kind of thing surface in the country.
I want to go to a country neighboring South Africa, Zimbabwe. There has been a change of heart by the country's elderly leader, Robert Mugabe. He started out by evicting some white farmers. Now he has turned to something called Operation Drive Out the Trash, ousting more than 700,000 people, almost all of them black Africans, black Zimbabweans. What has Mugabe done in terms of changing his opinion of his own actions, and what political decision-making power does he have left with an overwhelming threat of economic sanctions by the U.S., the U.K., international lending agencies, and the like?
Well, make no mistake, Robert Mugabe is one of the shrewdest politicians on this continent. He has survived opprobrium on the part of the West and also has presided over the virtual disintegration of his country, which used to be the breadbasket of Africa, and now it is Africa's basket case. People are going hungry there. They have no jobs. They're flooding into South Africa, trying to find work just so that they can sustain their families. Well, as you just said, this operation that he unleashed, Operation Restore Order, back in May, destroyed the homes of some 700,000 Zimbabweans, mostly poor people living in shacks in the slums. That effectively affected more than 2.4 million people. And initially, the United Nations, which went in and confirmed the charges of human rights organizations that there were gross violations of human rights during this flattening of thousands of shacks and small businesses and markets, the United Nations came in and confirmed that there were gross violations of human rights and offered to rebuild some of those shacks or at least build shelters for so many of those people who were made homeless by the slum demolition campaign. Initially, Robert Mugabe said no, but for some reason, and it could be pressure from the international community, which of course he would never acknowledge, but he has now agreed to allow the United Nations to build 20,000 temporary shelters. So those shelters are going to begin building those within a very short period of time. And this is a big victory for the people who were critical of the government's actions and also a victory for the United Nations.
Finally, let me ask you a more theoretical question. And just in brief, some political scientists argue that it's easier to replace a colonial system, which is in many ways dictatorial, with a dictatorship, even if it's considered a liberated state. So you can go from a colonial system to a dictator more easily than from a colonial system to a democracy. Is that in part what's affecting some of the upheavals on the continent right now?
I really find that a very theoretical question, because this comes at a time when increasing numbers of African countries are in fact moving to multi-party systems. This is the what I call the second wind on the continent. The first, as former British Prime Minister Harold Macmillan said just before the end of colonialism, that there was a new wind of change blowing across the continent, and it was heralding the end of colonialism and the institution of independent states. And as you know, over the years, those states, newly independent, have had serious problems of governance. I mean, many of them went the socialist route, and of course, that didn't work, Tanzania and Julius Nyerere being primary among them. But now you have this second wind where the African Union, led by people like Thabo Mbeki and Olusegun Obasanjo of Nigeria, Bouteflika of Algeria, and Abdoulaye Yahya Wade of Senegal, all of these leaders have signed on to multi-party democracy. They have put in new rules of the road for African leaders and the West, in fact, in partnership. Africans will get their economic and political houses in order, respecting human rights, respecting individual choice and civil liberties in exchange for economic support from the West. So I think that to posit that it's easier for countries to go from colonial systems to dictatorships is just to ignore this second wind of change that is fragile on the continent, but is nevertheless appearing at this point to be inexorable.
NPR's Charlene Hunter-Galt from Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was NPR's Farai Chidea. You can look forward to more of these updates with Charlene in the weeks to come.